ஜம்முன்னா தீராவண்ணாச்சாரே, ஜம்முன்னா தீராவண்ணாச்சாரே, ஜெய்யா ராதா மத்தபா குஞ்ச பிஹாரே. ஜெய்யா ராதா மதவா குஞ்ச பிஹாரே. ஜெயம் விஷ்ணுபாத் பரமஹம்ச பரிவிராஜ ஆச்சார்ய அஷ்டோத்தர சத சிஷ்யமாத் ஹிஸ் டிவைன் கிரேஸ் ஏசி பக்தி வேதாந்த சுவாமி ஸ்ரீல பிரபுபாத கி. கிரந்தராஷ்மம் பாகவதம் கி நிதாய கௌர பிரேமநந்தி. ஓ க்ளோரிஸ் டு தி அசெம்பிள் டிவோட்டீஸ், ஓ க்ளோரிஸ் டு தி அசெம்பிள் டிவோட்டீஸ், ஓ க்ளோரிஸ் டு தி அசெம்பிள் டிவோட்டீஸ், ஓ க்ளோரிஸ் டு ஸ்ரீ குரு வன்ஷி கௌரங்கா.
ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. So we're continuing the chapter that's entitled The Lord Incarnates as Mohini Murti. And today we're going to be covering text 12 through 18. So it's Canto 8, Chapter 9, text 12 through 18. And text 12 is on the board. So we can chant responsibly. Tam Shri Sakim Kanaka Kundala Charu Karana. Sorry, I jumped to 18. Tato Grihit Vamrita Bhajanam Hari. Babhasa Ishat Smita Sub. Supaya Gira. Yadi api upetam kvachas sadivs asadu va. Kritam maya vo vipaye sudam imam. Tato griha vamrita bhajanam harir. Babhasa isat smita supaya gira. Yadi api upetam kvacha svadasaduva. Kritam maya bhovipaye sadham imam. Tato griha vamrita bhajanam hari. Babhasa isat smita sopaya gira. Yadi api upetam kvachad sadava saduvam. kritamayo vo vipaye sudamimam. Please chant. Tato grihi vamrita bhajanam hari. Babasa isat smita sobaya gira. Yadiya piyupetam kvacha sirvasadva. Krita maya vo vipaye sudamimam. Tato kriha vim vimamyata bhajanam harir. Babasa isat smita sobaya gira. Yadiya piya yopityam kvaja duzadubha. Kritam maya bo vipaye sudamimam. Tato grihidvam rita bhajanam harir. Babasa isat smita sobaya gira. Yadiya puyupetam kvaja sadvasa duba. Kritam maya vo vipaye sudamimam. Tato griha vamrita bhajanam harir. Babasa isat smita sobaya gira. Yadiya biyupetam kvaja sadvasa dvadva. Kritam maya vo vipaye sudamimam. So the word for word. Tata, thereafter. Grihitva, taking possession of. Amrita bhajanam, the pot containing the nectar. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, in the form of Mohini. Baba Sas, spoke. Isat, slightly. Smita Shobaya Gira, with smiling beauty and by words. Yadi, if, abhyupetam, promise to be accepted, kvacha, whatever it may be, sadhu asaduva, whether honest or dishonest, kritamaya, is done by me, va, unto you, vipaye, I shall give you the proper share, sudam, nectar, imam, this. Translation. Thank you. Thereafter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having taken possession of the container of nectar, smiled slightly and spoke in attractive words. She said, "My dear demons, if you accept whatever I may do, whether honest or dishonest, then I can take responsibility for dividing the nectar among you." Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot abide by anyone's dictation. Whatever he does is absolute. The demons, of course, were deluded by the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus Mohini Murti got them to promise that whatever she would do, they would accept. And I'll go through the text up through 18. So, text 13. Abhivya Vritantasya Akarniya Sura Pungava Upramana Vidastasya Statateti Anvama Satam. Translation of text 13. The chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. Upon hearing the sweet words of Mohini Murti, they immediately assented. Yes, they answered, what you have said is all right. Thus, the demons agreed to accept her decision. Then it's text 14 through 15. Athoposya krita snana hutvacha havisanalam tatva govipra putebhya krita svatyayana dvija yato payosam vasamsi paridaya tatani te kusheshu pavishan sarve pringagreshu abhihushitaha. Translation. The demigods and demons then observed a fast. After bathing, they offered clarified butter and oblations into the fire and gave charity to the cows and to the brahmanas and members of the other orders of society, namely the kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, who were all rewarded as they deserved. Thereafter, the demigods and demons performed ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the brahmanas. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of kusha grass. Purport. The Vedas enjoin that for every ritualistic ceremony, one must first become clean by bathing either in the water of the Ganges or Yamuna or in the sea. Then one may perform the ritualistic ceremony and offer clarified butter into the fire. In this verse, the words Paridhaya Abhatani are especially significant. A sannyasi, or a person about to perform a ritualistic ceremony, should not dress himself in clothing sewn with a needle. Text 16 and 17. Pran mukeshu pavishteshu sureshu ditiyeshu cha jupamodita sulayam justayam malya dipakai tasyam narendra karaboraru sadukula shronita talasha gatir madavi vapalakshi. Sakuyati kanaka nupura sinijitena kumbastani kalasha panir atavivesha. Translation of 16 and 17. O King, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena fully decorated with flower garlands and lamps and fragrant with the smoke of incense, that woman, dressed in a most beautiful sari, her ankle bells tinkling, entered the arena, walking very slowly because of her big, low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. Her breasts were like water jugs. Her thighs resembled the trunks of elephants, and she carried a water pot in her hand. Text 18. Tam Shri Sakim Kanaka Kundala Charu Karna Nashakapola vadanam para devatakayam samviksha samumumuhur utsmita vikshanena devasura vigalia stana patikantam. And the translation for text 18. Her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears, adorned with golden earrings, made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's border on her breast moved slightly aside. When the demigods and demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them and slightly smiling, they were all completely enchanted. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks here that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a feminine form, and that the Goddess of Fortune is her associate. This form assumed by the Personality of Godhead challenged the Goddess of Fortune. The Goddess of Fortune is beautiful, but if the Lord accepts the form of a woman, he surpasses the Goddess of Fortune in beauty. It is not that the Goddess of Fortune, being female, is the most beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful that he can excel any beautiful goddess of fortune by assuming a female form. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacya Deshatarine Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sandubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Okay, so I found myself turning my attention to text 18 in this series of verses. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is drawing attention to a remark made by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur clearly states that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a feminine form, and that the Goddess of Fortune is her associate, meaning that the Goddess of Fortune doesn't change her position. So there's an implication to this statement of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and that is that if one were to compare the beauty of Mohini Murti with that of the beauty of the Goddess of Fortune, the beauty of Mohini Murti would surpass that of the Goddess of Fortune. So the conclusion is that the beauty of the Lord is so great that when he assumes a female form, his beauty surpasses that of the Goddess of Fortune. So the corollary thing is that it's not that the beauty of the Goddess of Fortune lies in her being female. It's just that the beauty of the Lord himself surpasses all beauty, including that of the Goddess of Fortune. So the description that's given here of this form assumed by the Lord, Mohini Murti, reads like this. Her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears adorned with golden earrings made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's border on her breast moved slightly aside. So naturally the question arises, what defines this beauty of the Lord? So there's a clue that comes from a particular statement that Krishna himself makes, and that is that before I get to the statement, he has a body that doesn't become worse in quality. And its activities are all in the mode of goodness. And so any activity that's done by the Lord in whatever body he's assumed is considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation. So any activity. So, I mean, this is significant if you consider that any beauty that we're accustomed to in our realm of existence is bound to unfortunately deteriorate in some way. So I recall seeing a particular visual of one of the current music personalities who's considered very attractive. I don't want to say the name because I don't know them very well. And then somebody had done a fast forward picture 20 years from now. And so in the one picture there's, you know, soft blonde hair and, you know, big eyes and crease-free face. And in the next picture, you know, the hair looks a little thinned out. There's lines on the forehead. There's creases along the eyes and the chin has dropped a little bit. So that's what's meant by that deterioration in quality. So the Lord's body doesn't have that. It doesn't become worse in quality in any way. So that's some key to the beauty that's present. it's going to constantly remain that way. So this, and the other part, that any activity that's performed in whatever body he's assumed is actually auspicious for progressing on the path of liberation, which means that his body is transcendental. So this is Krishna's statement about his own body, which is in Bhagavad Gita 4:6. This is what he says. Although I'm unborn, my transcendental body never deteriorates. And although I'm the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So completely unchanging, even millenniums may pass. He'll be in his original perfect form that hasn't deteriorated. So I'll read that verse in Sanskrit too, because it's very nice. Apo pis mams Avyayatma Bhutanam Ishvaropi San Prakritim Svam Abhishtaya Samisvam Mi Atma Mayaya. So Krishna's actually explaining his Prakriti or his nature and his form, his Svarup. So he's stating he appears in his own body. So that means that the Lord doesn't actually change his body, which is a little bit of a difficult concept to understand, because it would imply, in relation to what we're looking at here, that he has a female form, but it's his own body. So it's a little difficult to comprehend, because a change of body in our conception means that, you know, there's that whole deterioration that's gradually happening, and then at some point it's sort of broken down completely, and then that soul will be put into another body, and that body has to go through a whole process of change even to come to its point of perhaps being at the young age of Mohini Murti, of, you know, showing all beauty and youthfulness. So it's very difficult to comprehend that the switch into a different form, it's the same body. So it's just externally manifesting in a particular way. so rather extraordinary. So this is all to point to the clue of why the beauty is there. Clearly, you know, with deterioration, the beauty aspect is diminishing, it's fading. So, actually, I'll mention something else. I did happen to see some particular interview of a woman who was a very famous actress at one point and was considered the most sought after in terms of her beauty, some woman Welsh, and she was giving an interview. So at this point she was in her 70s, I think like 75 or something. So the woman still had on a dress which attempted to show the curves of the body because it was some knit form, and the hair was, you know, given a lot of volume to appear very lush, lustrous and bountiful. And but if one compared it to other pictures which were flashed on the screen of her form earlier on, you know, gone was the vibrancy, gone was the particular kind of alertness that one sees with youth. Rather, it was somebody who was, you know, clearly the whole mechanism of the body had slowed down, so everything was said but with not much animation, and only that animation comes with the youthful aspect. So anyway, similar thing. Her body was clearly in the process of change and deterioration, and soon, no doubt, an exit would have to happen from that particular body. So now, to underline this fact that it's the Lord who's appearing in a particular form, and here it's Mohini Murti, we can also look at how Lord Brahma explains, because he's one of the demigods. So he's explaining something of how the Lord's able to appear in a particular form. So in Brahma Samhita, I'll do the Sanskrit and then the English translation just to have some idea of how this is possible, this appearance in a different form by Lord Krishna. Ramadi mutishu kalaniyamena tishtan navataram akarod bhuvaneshu kintu Krishna svayam samabhavat paramapumam yogovindam maripusham tamaham bhajami. So this is Lord Brahma speaking. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's always situated in various incarnations, such as Ram, Shrima, and many sub-incarnations as well. But who is the original personality of Godhead, known as Krishna, and who incarnates personally also? So he's pointing to this Krishna, although original, he's always able to be present in all these different forms. There's no problem for him. And it's his own body in all the different forms. So not only the one form that we see here, Mohini Murti, the female form, but all these other incarnations, his own body is present in each of them. So very difficult concept to understand with our very constrained one body, deteriorating body, very difficult to understand. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he explains that all these like different avatars, incarnations, they are resulting from particular feelings or temperaments on the part of Krishna. So he just has to feel something or have a particular temperament and he manifests a particular form, and it's his own body. Very difficult to understand. So on the subtle level, just the thought and the temperament manifests the body. So And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that he just makes a little distinction that Ram, etc., they will appear from Vaikuntha, so a particular planet. And while Krishna manifests from Goloka Vrindavan in this world, so he's just coming also from a different spot. So here Mohini Murti, who's identical with Krishna, is directly manifesting the beauty of Lord Krishna. So that's the particular feeling or temperament he's got here. He wants to manifest his beauty. So we read the amazing description, walking very slowly because of her big, low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. So manifesting beauty. So Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, whose disappearance it is today, so I thought it's very nice somehow he came into this discussion. he's pointed to the fact that it's according to the personal relationship that one has with the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he's correspondingly been identified in a particular form. So we see this in the Puranas and Srimad Bhagavatam, just like we're reading here. So he's been identified in a particular way in the Srimad Bhagavatam or in the Puranas according to the particular relationship that's existing there with the personalities in that situation. So because they're different relationships with the particular personalities that we're reading about, there's different glorifications or different revelations about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here we're reading something of the revelation according to the relationship that the demons and the demigods have with Krishna. So when the demigods and the demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them and slightly smiling, they were all completely enchanted. So the beauty of Lord Krishna in this form of Mohini Murti, it's been revealed to both the demons and the demigods. And we get to understand how this is happening because of an explanation that's been given by the demigods. And I'll read it. This is from a different section of the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, in the 2nd chapter, in the 35th verse. So the demigods are explaining something of how this relationship brings about this revelation of something of Krishna's form. So these are their words. O Lord, cause of all causes, if your transcendental body were not beyond the modes of material nature, one could not understand the difference between matter and transcendence. Only by your presence can one understand the transcendental nature of your lordship, who are the controller of material nature. Your transcendental nature is very difficult to understand unless one is influenced by the presence of your transcendental form. So this would imply that Mohini Murti's nature couldn't be understood unless one was situated in transcendence. So this is how the demigods explain, you know, how you can actually understand something of the form that Lord Krishna has assumed. So particularly here, despite the statement of the demigods dealing with transcendental nature of Krishna, Mohini Murti's nature couldn't be understood unless one is situated in a transcendental relationship with Krishna. So it's only by his mercy or his kindness that one can understand him or her in this situation. So Earlier on, we learned that the demons, they're certainly not situated in transcendence. I mean, certainly not. And this is seen in their response to Mohinimurti. And their response, she had first said to them, "My dear demons, if you accept whatever I do, whether honest or dishonest," so she's letting them know, you know, she may go this way or she may go that way, "then I can take responsibility for dividing the nectar among you." So she's requiring them to accept first her role of supposedly distributing the nectar. But she qualifies it, "I may act honestly or dishonestly." So she's let them know in advance that, you know, there's that she can go either way. And what was their response? So remember, they're not situated in transcendence, so they don't have insight even into the implication of what's been told to them. They're just looking at her. And so their response immediately, I mean, it's not they sat there and deliberated. Remember, just prior to this, they'd been, that container of nectar had been going from hand to hand. There was a great anxiety on the part of the lesser demons that the greater demons would get the nectar and they wouldn't get some. I mean, there was complete consternation. The minute she said, "I may act honestly or dishonestly, but you have to accept that, you know, I can perhaps distribute this nectar among you." They didn't, it's not that they sat and deliberated. It says they immediately said, "Yes." "What you have said, it's all right." The intelligence is not working. And, I mean, the demons are not situated in transcendence. So they're not following regulative principles or regulative devotional principles. So it means the intelligence actually isn't getting refined and they're not actually seeing correctly. So they haven't awakened their transcendental nature. And but one can say they were certainly influenced by the transcendental form of Mohinimurti. Certainly one can say that. That form of beauty, they were certainly influenced, highly influenced, I mean, to the extent that they dropped all discernment. So, and we get a description again. Her ankle bells tinkled, entered the arena walking very slowly because of her big low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. So this description, attesting to Mohinimurti's youthful pride. So earlier on I was touching a little bit on like how with youth there's a lot of animation. So, you know, her eyes were moving, you know, very restlessly. And it said it's because of pride, youthful pride. So I wanted to make a connection to Lord Brahma, who's also comments at one time on Lord Krishna's youthfulness. So this is his statement. "I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who's inaccessible to the Vedas, but obtainable by pure unalloyed devotion of the soul, who's without a second, who's not subject to decay, is without a beginning, whose form is endless, who's the beginning and the eternal Purusha, yet he's a person possessing the beauty of blooming youth." So Lord Brahma takes everything of Lord Krishna and puts as its highlight his blooming youth, the beauty of blooming youth. And it's very similar to what we're catching, what's in this description of Mohinimurti, her youthful pride. So you can easily see the connection in terms of this form having been assumed by Lord Krishna, since it's such a prominent feature, his blooming youth. And that's in Sri Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma's description. I think it's particularly extraordinary, this verse, because it's so pertinent to the discussion, talking about his form has been endless. You know, this idea that, you know, he's incarnating and just by his temperament a form manifests. So his form is endless. That's Lord Brahma's description. I mean, you don't think of it that way, but it's endless. And and also he mentioned, isn't subject to decay. So this is very prominent. This is all part of the beauty of Mohini Murti. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he does a paraphrase of the demigod's prayer. So I'm going to read his paraphrase. When you appear in your different incarnations, you take different names and forms according to different situations. Lord Krishna is your name because you're all attractive. You're called Shyamasundar because of your transcendental beauty. Sham means blackish. Yet they say, you are more beautiful than thousands of cupids. Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya. Although you appear in a color which is compared to that of a blackish cloud, you are the transcendental absolute, and therefore your beauty is many, many times more attractive than the delicate body of Cupid. Sometimes you are known as Giridhari because you lifted the hill known as Govardhan. You are sometimes known as Nandanandana or Vasudeva or Devaki Nandana because you appear as a son of Devaki or Maharaj Nanda or Vasudev. Impersonalists think that your name or forms are according to a particular type of work and quality because they accept your form from the position of a material observer. So, I thought this paraphrasing was significant in terms of the position of the demons. Basically, they're material observers. They're just looking at the external, and it's on a very material level. because they're not situated in transcendence, they were so confident of her honesty, just by her physical appearance, like, that they immediately delivered the container of nectar to her. So I've read that there's surveys have been done, and generally people make the assumption that if somebody is extremely beautiful, that they also must be extremely intelligent. This is a common assumption that's made by persons, and in this particular case, the demons made the assumption that beauty meant honesty, even though she had directly said to them, I may be honest or dishonest. So, but they were so confident of her honesty based on her beauty that they handed the nectar to her. So, and in fact, if you think of the significance to I guess without deliberation have made a wrong assumption and to so freely give the nectar. I mean, Srila Prabhupada describes it that they gave it so easily, it was as though she could do whatever she liked with it. You know, it didn't matter. They were so entranced, enchanted by her beauty. I mean, even if she threw it away, it was going to be fine. Even if she drank it herself, it was going to be fine. So, we get some idea of the internal thinking also of the demons. I'm drawing from Krishna's insight into their thinking in Bhagavad Gita, because it's from the 16th chapter and the 15th verse. So here's Lord Krishna's insight into demoniac thinking. I'm the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There's none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity. And thus I shall rejoice. And the interesting thing is this wonderful insight of Lord Krishna. What happens here? The demons sit down with the demigods. They're going to perform a sacrifice.
Hmm.
can say this is the sacrifices. Sacrifices are usually done to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, the sacrifice is to please Mohini Murti. They've already handed the nectar over to her. So considering the fact that they don't have that relationship in the first place, one can question what is the significance of their performing the sacrifice. But they sit down, you know, they'll give a bit of charity. And indeed, you read the description here, they give some charity to the cows, to the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. You know, everything's done by them. Because you know, they already, it's all on the mental plane. Oh, I'll just do these actions and everything will be fine. but what does Lord Krishna say about that being on the mental plane? He says they're persons deluded by ignorance. And the ignorance implies that they're ignorant of the process of self-realization. So it means that they never grasp the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna appearing as Mohini Murti, meaning that they don't understand that her activities are actually going to allow for progressive spiritual realization. So they will benefit, but they don't understand because they haven't entered into the whole process of self-realization. So they're very external. So this is something of the position here. At least I've highlighted the demons, but in relation to the beauty of Mohini Murti. So if there's any thoughts to expand our discussion.
A question about understanding Krishna's form, specifically in relation to all the artwork that we see. There's so many different variations of like Krishna or styles of artwork that we see from the devotees, and so oftentimes, like trying to, I'm like always trying to think about Krishna, what Krishna looks like, but it is influenced, my perception is influenced by the artwork of the devotees. So I'm wondering how to comprehend that, because that might need, that's not what Krishna looks like actually. Like, exactly, it's close maybe, but it's not exactly. So how to look at the artwork, like, and how to understand Krishna's form in relation to that.
So the question is that there's different styles that devotees have used in depicting Krishna's form, and then when one's actually looking at those different styles, one may still be wondering, you know, how can you understand, you know, maybe which is Krishna's actual form, or what is Krishna's actual form, like that, because of the different styles. So the implication in the question is that the varied way in which Krishna is depicted would indicate that oneself as the viewer would have to choose, in some sense, which one is accurate, because one would want accuracy to be the prominent feature. That's what I'm understanding from your question. The implication is that one would want to choose the accurate one. So in some sense, what I'm understanding the question is, you know, how do you discern which is the accurate one? Well, if one understands that any person who's functioning in a devotional relationship with Krishna is performing a service of depicting him, one would have to understand too that intelligence has been given to that person to perform that service of depicting Krishna. So one would take it that perhaps there's a person is in that stage in their spiritual life where, you know, Krishna's being carried in the heart, and so one is actually seeing Krishna. Or if not the case, that the spiritual master has given a description of Krishna, which I think I've heard that one devotee who used to be in New York and who has done some of the paintings, Jadurani, she received a verbal description of Krishna. So based on that, she painted, and I believe she showed something to Srila Prabhupada, and I think Jitendra may know better than I do, but I believe she showed something to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada indicated that this or that had to be different, but I don't know the details. So either it's an internal scene of Krishna that's allowing for that external depiction, or the spiritual master has given a very precise description that then that devotee performing that service of depicting Krishna is working according to that description. So those two would be, I guess, the criteria for accuracy. So if it's hanging up and we regularly, or it's in a book published, we take it that the criteria has been met. That we don't have to ourselves evaluate, is it correct or not? We can take it that the criteria have been met, because Srila Prabhupada no doubt gave his stamp of approval for the visuals that we find in the various publications. And then to truly perhaps... if one wanted to sit and study a picture, one could take some of the descriptions that are given in Srimad Bhagavatam of Krishna's form and say, okay, I'm reading this. Okay, yes, yes, I see this detail, I see that detail. And then, okay, I accept. So the verbal description in the Srimad Bhagavatam can be matched up with the visual recording. In terms of style, it's true that on a personal level, aesthetics come into play. So, for instance, I got a book recently that I was thinking to use for the school, and the advertisement for the book was that the graphics were very special. So it's entitled The Sun God, so it's pictures of Lord Ramachandra. So I found when I looked at the illustrations, I appreciated the ones that were of the demons. I thought, ah, yes, yes, I can relate to these. But the ones that were of Lord Ramachandra or Sita, I had a little bit of a harder time with, because I have a different sense of aesthetics. Like the colors I like are different, you know, or how this particular body, what it relates to color-wise or proportion-wise. it was a little bit harder to... I appreciated the effort and the style, but it wasn't in accord with perhaps my particular, or how this body and senses work in terms of color or proportion. So there's that aspect that does come in naturally, because we do come with a particular set of senses. But of course, that doesn't detract from the authenticity of the particular depiction, so provided it's meeting the criteria that I described earlier. So I hope that answers somewhat. Thank you. Jitendra Prabhu.
I think there was like 44 different illustrations. Now there's like 14, right? There's like 14 or something. You know, they used to have a lot more. And then, you know, the one that came out in 1972. But then there was a picture of the stairway to elevation and the stairway to degradation, then they had that one that was supposed to epitomize lust, and Prabhupada looked at that and the jewelry and the, you know, I don't know if you remember that picture, and Prabhupada said that Maya's a little more subtle. So that was kind of overemphasized a lot of things that, you know, were meant to be more subtle, you know. But yeah, and as far as some of the paintings, I remember the artists that were trying to paint the paintings, Prabhupada says they're not they weren't really trained as artists, but due to their desire to please me and Krishna, that Krishna gave them that expertise to paint. So it's like it was a desire within the devotee to please the spiritual master. So, you know, Krishna created the beautiful artwork. You know, that's my understanding. And then I think Jadarani kind of left for another group, and she's still painting for that group, you know, Narayan Maharaj. I've seen some of her artwork. But you might know better. I don't think she ever came here, but she's spent a lot of time in New York, right?
There's example of
the
painting of Narada Muni, that when they first were painting Narada Muni, who was supposed to be a spaceman, you know, like the descriptions is, you know, he flies and, you know, so the Maharaja Urani was telling this, that when they thought, okay, so, you know, they related it to a flying person, you know, the spaceman, so Superman. So they painted Narada Muni super buff and, you know, like very muscular, you know, playing the Veena, you know, but with these big biceps, you know, and and then when Prabhupada say, no. Narada Muni is not, you know, so stout. He's, you know, he's very, you know, his body is very lean and, you know, is pleasant, you know. He's not skinny, but, you know, he's not like this, you know, super buff. So, so not according, you know, there's certain things like Krishna Archana Mataji say that there's, you know, one have to get the picture from the scriptures and then try to paint accordingly, you know, or make it accordingly, like that. Prabhupada made them change from super Narada Muni to...
That one picture over there of Krishna Gopal, there's been a few, you know, renditions of that, but I think Prabhupada said that was his favorite picture of Krishna. And they had the Brijbasi pictures of Gopal Krishna. I remember finding it in the Evanston Temple, and it was all torn up. And then devotees were getting that later. It's like a Brijbasi picture. There's a place in New Delhi called Fate Puri, and they have all those old pictures, you know, before ISKCON, you know. And then they had... they had some really, I went there once in 82 and they had these pictures, and they said that these aren't for sale because they were the originals, but they had these colors. I've never seen these colors before, you know. They were real subtle, and it was pretty incredible. I guess the place is still there, but it's pretty, they had thousands and thousands of prints, you know. So I think I remember Prabhupada saying, because Prabhupada has a Gopal Krishna picture behind him on a wall in some of the photo shoots. And a devotee told me, he said that was Srila Prabhupada's favorite picture of Krishna. You know the one I'm talking about, this one over here by the office? But that's it's done by somebody else, but the original Brijbasi ones were the, I forget when they were painted, but, you know, a long, long time ago.
Prabhupada also, Maharaja Urani once was telling us that the paintings that you find in India, there's so many paintings of Krishna that you find in India, that, you know, Krishna appears by himself, and Prabhupada say those are not bona fide. that Krishna is never by himself, he's always with his devotees. He's never, so it's always, you know, Krishna's devotee accompanied in the form of a cow or in the form of a parrot or birds or his, you know, the gopas, the gopis, like that. But he's never by himself. And so, you know, these are things that are, like you say, very specific. The spiritual master makes very specific instructions of how Krishna should be depicted.
Thank you for your original question, Jordan. It led to a lot of discussion. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada Ki Jai.